Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, we have one of my favorite guests back again. Always good to have him with us. He's been in the real estate business for nigh on 25 to 35 to 45, who knows, at least 40 years doing this stuff. He's done everything. Before he became to Lifestyles, which is an interesting part of his story, he was vice president of the second largest property management company in the United States. He operated over 100 properties, over 26,000 units. And along with that, he was also the past president of three local apartment associations, which would be Dallas, Tarrant County, I believe, whatever they were. There's all of them. He's been the National Apartment Association chairman, PAC chairman. He's been housing chair, TA. I just throw stuff out there. He's got every type of title and award and everything. He's done everything. He's done every kind of housing. He's done new construction. He's done rehabs. He's done tax credits. He's done senior housing. He's done it all. And the interesting part of the story was he did all that as a career. And then we finally got him to come over and do it as an owner. So, Robert, welcome to the show again.
Always glad to be back. And I appreciate Lifestyles Unlimited and how you've changed my life. So glad to be back.
Well, I'm going to break this show up into four different segments. The first one, for the people who've never heard your story, let's go ahead and get that out about what you were doing before you came to Lifestyles and how hard it was to get you to come. In other words, we really pushed to convince you. Unlike most people, they just come in because they want to. You were no, 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 and no. And so tell that story. Then we're going to go from that story, we're going to go into what you've done here. And then we're going to go into, you wrote an article the other day, I noticed. And the article talked about a couple things I would like you to cover. This is later in another couple, late segments. We're going to talk to you about you said how hard it was to operate through a recession and how you've lived through recessions both as an employee and as an owner now. And that was interesting. I want to get that out. And then last, we'll end the last segment with, hey, your article said you think it's time to buy again. We want to hear why that is. So let's go ahead and, for the people who have not heard your story before, share with them where you came from and why it was so hard to come here.
Well, I was a typical American. I was trained to be a W-2 employee. Go to college, get your job, work hard, work your way up the corporate ladder. And I did all that. And, you know, it's funny. I just took a vacation a couple of weeks ago. And I thought in the old days with W-2 jobs, it was like, oh, man, if I work really, really hard, I've earned this week of vacation. And later in the year, I'll earn another week of vacation. Well, now I control my time and I can take vacation whenever the heck I want or however long I want. Just a different world, controlling your time. But I worked my way up to the big corner office. Got uppity up in the apartment association and all of this stuff, thinking I was all high and mighty. And John Ridgeway kept trying to, another LU member who was on the career path I was on, joined Lifestyles and said, you got to quit doing what you're doing and do this and be in control of your own destiny. I'm like, John, John, stop. It sounds like pyramid. I don't know. Just leave me alone. And he tried for about 8 years like that to get me to even consider it until he finally said, well, what are you going to live on when you retire? And I'm like, well, that's the stupidest question anyone's asked me, the home equity, my savings, my 401k. And he goes, yeah, and you outlive those, so you hope you die before you outlive those. And I went, well, I guess so. And he said, well, I'm never going to touch any of that. I'm going to live off of passive income. And I don't know why, but after 8 years, that was the hook that finally set. And I'm like, okay, tell me more about that.
It's funny how, right place, right time. They say when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. So obviously that was the point. There is a lot of reality to the fact that when you work your way up in corporate America, they pound it into your head. I know when I worked there, they were telling me, you're lucky to have this position. And you'd go home at night believing it. Yeah, I am. I'm lucky to be where I'm at. And God, I would never walk away from this. I worked so hard to get there. Do you have those kinds of feelings?
Oh, absolutely. And you even had it, and Ridgeway and I had the same career path where you do such a good job, they sell the portfolio, and say, gosh, it was really nice working with you. Thank you so much. You'd spend down your savings for 4 or 6 months and you start it all over the roller coaster. But yeah, you were just like, God, I could be let go tomorrow. It doesn't matter how good I am.
Wow, that's amazing. So when you came in, obviously you know everything about operating real estate. What was the secret sauce that you needed to hear or learn or put together or rationalize that allowed you to see that you could actually own these things? I mean, you've been making people money with real estate for 30 years, whatever it was. And, I mean, you're seeing multi-mega-million-dollar deals.
Yeah, and I'm seeing those owners go from being just a guy like me, and suddenly they have their second and third home, the $200,000 boat. And I'm like, what is this secret sauce? I'm like, so close. And I thought at some point, like a law firm, surely somebody's going to make me a partner. And it only took me like 25 years to realize that doesn't really happen in our industry. So, again, I guess I'm a slow learner, but joined Lifestyles and learned about all the tax benefits with distributions being tax-free and all the other things, the pieces, the secret sauce, that's really not that secret. You just have to go to a weekend seminar and learn about it. That's when everything really started accelerating.
So when you came in, obviously you had an advantage to get started right away because you already had all the operational background. How did you get started? What did you do right away to get going?
I joined, and I'm kind of a personality. I'm like, I'm not going to be a passive. With my 30-plus years of experience in property management, I would just drive somebody crazy saying, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? I'm going to go in directly as a lead syndicator and buy my own deal. And we went in and bought a 120-unit deal right off of the bat. I mean, within, I want to say, 3 or 4 months of joining. The interesting thing to me, too, though, is that I was a PAC chair for National Apartment Association, raising millions of dollars a year. And I thought, oh, I can raise money. This is not a problem. Before I joined Lifestyles. And I realized that as soon as the door opened and people saw me, they're like, oh, God, there's Tenning Run. He's going to ask for money. And then I joined Lifestyles.
I think I ran away from you a few times in a few meetings in the apartment association, too. Whenever you see those PAC guys, you do run. There's no doubt.
Yeah, no question. But then with the networking and everything else at Lifestyles, 120-unit deal, I was told at the time that that was the biggest first-time lead deal. Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know, but we were just happy to get that deal and get the ball rolling.
Okay. So that one worked out. You sold that one. You went on and bought more. How quickly did you move through the ranks there? Because I see you really accelerated the size of the properties you purchased. 120, 68, 250, 464, 224, 360. Man, those are some units. How did you get through and how long did it take you to get through all that?
I like to be, it doesn't sound like it when you read it like that, but I like to be slow and steady, digest, buy one, digest it, get it in the system. So it's probably a year and a half between deals. And the market was just such at the time that we were able to buy really well, but then we would have insane offers come to us where people would offer us, this may not mean something to people in the audience, but we were selling stuff at 2.75 cap rates, stuff that we wanted to sell for or own for 5 years. And we're like, I can't return down that kind of pricing. So we sold it. And then the brokers, obviously, we got on their radar, so they kept giving me better and better deals.
Yeah, for the people who are out there who don't know what cap rates, it's how we value an apartment complex. And 2.7 cap rate means that you're selling it for about twice what it's worth, quite honestly. No matter what age the property was, it's still like twice what it's worth. So if it was an older property, that's a killer price. You wrote an article to some people the other day, and it was interesting. You talked about what is the difference going through a recession as an employee compared to going through it as an owner, operator. Can you share that conversation that you had put out?
Sure. I mean, it's just a completely different perspective. As an employee, you're just, you don't have the ownership perspective in the sense that you're like, why are they cutting me off from supplies? Why is money tight? I need this. I need this air conditioner repaired. I want. And it's very few people as employees that understand it from the ownership perspective of taxes have gone up, insurance has gone up. But it's critical in those downturns for management, and I mean management from the top down, to understand property management and how to manage well, as opposed to deferring stuff to the future because it's like, well, let's just not fix that air conditioner. Let's just not rent that unit. and making poor decisions like that that start a death spiral for the asset.
Now, do you think that you had a clear image of that having worked in the business before you owned business?
Oh, absolutely. I started, I hate to date myself, but I started in 86. It was the worst down cycle that I've been in my career. I saw people, other developers offering 2 months free on a 6 month lease. The company I worked for actually had a hotline that when the lender walked in the door to say, give us the keys, you kick them out, lock the door, called the hotline, because if you gave them the keys, they were in possession. If you kicked them out, then you could go through bankruptcy court and fight it out. This is kind of stuff on site I was learning right in the business.
You know, I started that same period of time, but I started as an owner, so I never had that inside. I always looked at everybody doing that, and it always, you know, kind of freaked me out, like, okay, how do you stay in business when you start cannibalizing? And, you know, right. We'll share with everybody out there what cannibalizing means. Short story is, you lose a stove where there's a paying tenant, you take one out of a vacant unit, virtually rendering that unit a down unit from that point forward. Then you start cannibalizing everything else out of that unit. Did you guys do that, or out of necessity? And if so, why didn't the owners just come up with some more money and keep the thing afloat?
I guess I was fortunate for the most part that the companies I worked for did not allow that, because, one, it creates at least double the work from the maintenance team, because they're doing two jobs instead of one, right? They're moving the stuff and having to get new stuff that didn't have. And really, it's three or four times the job. So it just bogs down everything. But two, it's just extremely short-sighted if they plan on owning the asset. So overall, I got lucky, but I saw some really bad operators do a whole lot of that stuff. And like I said, it becomes a death spiral that you can never get out of, because you're just backing up so much expenses that need to be happening. And then suddenly you don't have the money. So what are you going to do? You're going to sell at a loss.
So we've just gone through a couple years of not that bad a recession, there's no doubt. But we went through what I call a black swan event. You know, the government decided it was time to change the interest rates. The inflation was too high. They raised the interest rates to fight inflation. People that had adjustable rate mortgages got thumped on the head. Values had gotten so high because the cap rates had been reducing. Like you said, you're selling for prices that were unrealistic. Once the prices get that unrealistic, what happens? Well, first of all, the taxing authorities get a hold of that information and taxes go up. Second of all, insurance companies realize that they're replacing twice as expensive pieces of property. So they start increasing theirs. And then there were some hurricanes and, you know, boom, 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 you turn around and operating expenses have gone up radically, put a lot of people in very difficult situations, along with the fact that a lot of those people, Robert, you had talked about it, bought the property from you paying really what I thought was double what they should be paying. How do you fight all three of those heirs at the same time? Or one of them is an heir paying too much, the other is an heir, you got an adjustable rate mortgage during times of raising interest rates. The third or fourth one, which is tax and insurance, you really can't do anything about. How did you see guys fighting through this, and did they? Or were there just some people that were just too far gone?
You know, it reminds me of the 80s, where we called it musical chairs and the music stopped. And a lot of people just got caught without a chair. And that's, I feel like, what happened here, too. Valuation just plummeted 30% more or more on a deal. And suddenly your debt service, your mortgage, is more than what the property is worth in some cases. So some people have survived. Some people have had to sell at a loss. Some people are kicking the can down the road, I think, just hoping that some miracle of miracles is going to happen. Values are going to come back. Rents are going to come back. But honestly, I mean, I think you're right. A black swan event, and we're in a big reset. It leads into why it's going to be good opportunities to buy coming up.
Well, that, I agree with you 100% on that. That's why I thought your article was so interesting. It's always interesting when someone is in alignment with what you already believe. And I thought you stated it fairly well. As we go into this situation, we're coming out of this deal where these people have been extend and pretend for the last two or three years. And that's kind of the quote they've given it. How do we get through this? Well, just keep trying to extend our situation, hope and pretend that it's all going to go back to where the values, you know, like you said, they've come down 30 as much as 40% in some cases. And there's no way out the other side because the mortgage was a 70% mortgage. So, that you know, you're underwater. And we're seeing deals right now. Up until now, Robert, what has happened is the banks weren't willing to release. In other words, guys got a property, it's worth less than what the mortgage is. The bank's going, I don't care. We're not going to let go. And we'll just foreclose on you, or you keep extending. So people kept extending. But now what's happening is the bank's going, hey, either you sell it and take the loss, or if the loss is more than what we're, you know, under the note, we're just going to go ahead and take the loss and sell it and kick you out of the deal, basically. I mean, it's gotten to the point where the banks are not willing to do that anymore. And I think they're getting pressure from the top to stop doing that. You know, I think it's time where they, hey, let's clean the books up. Let's get back to the real world. And it's starting to happen. So as you're out there, and we're going to take another break here, when we come back, I would like you to talk about, you know, what you're seeing, because I'm seeing incredible opportunities. I'm doing 10 deals a day with people, consulting them on these deals. So we'll see what you're seeing, and we'll share that with everybody, and then we'll come back and talk about where you're at now. We'll be right back with Robert Tinning and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Life is challenging and ever-changing. Take control with passive income through real estate investing. Learn how. Learn now. Let Del Walmsley and Lifestyles Unlimited's investors and mentors show you. Meet Del's team and get educated now at Lifestyles Unlimited. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited. Text radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today is Robert Tinning. Robert is currently living, I believe, didn't you just buy yourself like some acreage? I had heard you moved like 26 acres or something up and got yourself the dream place.
Yep, absolutely. I love it.
Man, that's got to be different, huh? Getting up every day in the old days, getting up, going to work, fighting the traffic, getting there at the office, sitting there going through the day, then you get back in the car, driving the traffic again, and now you just sit out there on your land, huh?
Yeah, when I go into Dallas, because it's only about 35 minutes, but I choose when I go, so not when traffic. But even then, I'm like, I can't believe I did this every day, twice a day for 30 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Once I moved out of town, and, I retired at 34, so I didn't do anything. I haven't had to fight traffic for 35 years, so it's not a problem. But still, living out here in the suburbs and, living in, some acreage and stuff and nice and enjoying where you live is really a pleasure because you see it every day. You get up to it every day and live in it every day. And I just can't get across to people, you know, hey, it's nice to have a nice car, but, you know, the Ferrari, you can't drive at 180 miles an hour. You just can't enjoy it like you enjoy living in a beautiful home, beautiful location, and
absolutely,
so forth. It's one of the nicest things, you know, you can have. So as we're talking here, let's have your insight into what you're seeing as opportunities starting to grow again. I know that, like I said, as we went to break, all of a sudden, I'm busy as heck. You know, I've come back to consulting again because it's become so apparent that the deals are available again. And I'm just getting hammered from people wanting me to go over the deals with them. So what are you seeing?
Well, it's, you know, back in 2022, all the brokers and lenders were saying, survive until 25. Well, suddenly it's 25, and that seems like that deadline keeps getting pushed out about 6 months at a time. And now it's like, well, just survive until 26. Telling the current owners, just, you know, hang on, it's almost there. So what I've seen is, because I underwrite a lot of deals, I'm just super conservative in what I'll consider, but I would underwrite deals, and they were totally upside down, made no sense. And I'm like, you would have to sell this thing for $3-5 million less than what you're asking, and then maybe it would start to make sense. And the brokers would say, oh, we would never consider that. That would insult the buyer. I'm like, then don't tell them. Just forget it. I'll move on to the next deal. Lo and behold, 6 months later, that deal's back on the market at a lower price. And I'm starting to see deals now when I underwrite them. They're not quite there yet, but they're getting a lot closer. So I feel like reality is starting to set in, or the time clock has run out. I don't know, for a lot of these owners. Judgment day is here and they're having to sell. The deals are starting to make sense again.
So my approach to this has been, all the people that I'm mentoring is take the shot. You know, before you thought they were going to insult you, they were telling you it's an insult, I'm not even taking the offer to the seller. Now they're saying, put something on paper. Are you hearing that stuff yet?
I am. Where brokers are coming back and saying, hey, would you just make an offer?
Yeah, they just want to get if they figure if they get enough different offers on paper at a lower price, the seller's going to have to see the reality to it. It's what I think they're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. So it's not the broker then that's the bad guy that can say, look, it's not us, it's the market.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, here's what everybody's offering. They're there. The offers are all the same. And I think that's actually the way to do it, to be honest with you. I mean, somehow you have to open their eyes to the reality of what the market has done. I don't think they want to hear it. The other one, like you said, is I think they want to believe the market's going to change and come back. And all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, 2.7 cap rates again. I really believe they think that's going to happen in many cases.
Yeah, and the concern I have there is that historically cap rates have been around 5% or so. This free money that we had for the last, in the 2010s, is just unheard of. So I feel like the Fed really screwed stuff up then because it got valuations to go way up. Then they really screwed stuff up when they raised interest rates so fast and so much so quickly that really distorted markets again. But I agree with you. I think these owners that are thinking happy days are about to be here again and valuations are going to pop back up to what they were, they may. It may be 5-7 years from now, but when they do. But it's going to take a while.
Yeah. I saw a deal yesterday, 2023 construction. The it had a loan on it, 2.9, that was still in place for a couple more years, about 5 more years. I think it was a 7-year loan or something like that. There was 5 years left. At 2.9% interest rate, and you could buy the thing at a 5.3 cap rate. So this is a Class A property at 5.3. That's definitely what you're saying right now makes sense, right? Those are real numbers. That works. It was like a 7 or 8 cash-on-cash return right out of the blocks. Now, of course, that's 2.8, right, interest rate, 2.9, whatever it was, and it's also probably I.O. My guess is it's probably I.O. But the cash flow was just incredible, and I thought, man, this is it. Jump on that. And I told the guy, yeah, it's $50 million to go do it. It's worth it. You know, you'll be liking that one for the next 5 years.
Where you have to be deal specific, because I've heard people say, don't buy new stuff, don't buy 1970 stuff. I'm like, you got to look at the deal.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is the deal. It's not the property. It's not the age. There's deals in every group, subgroup, whatever there is. That's true. So are you considering another purchase? We'll start with this. How many properties do you still have right now? I see you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sales on your info sheet. What do you got now left over?
We sold all but one, and it's a 2003 construction, beautiful deal that we've had on case study and road shows and stuff. Beautiful deal, but we're just sitting tight with that one. We'd love to buy the deal next door that was built by the same builder and looks like our twin sister. But like I said, I'm conservative and I'm not just going to buy something. Frankly, it's too much brain damage and work. I want it to make sense and I want my investors to be happy. So,
well, that's great. All right. So we'll shift then. Let's flip the other direction. What's it like living out there on 26 acres and what all do you have out there on the 26 acres?
I jokingly say that I'm a gentleman farmer. And what that means is that we get an ag exemption for hay. And so we have someone that comes in and cuts the hay, bales the hay, and then I sell the hay. And it cuts my taxes probably by 2/3. I get to sit out here and watch this beautiful sunrises over our land and beautiful sunsets and all the wildlife. And like I said, we're about 35 minutes outside of downtown Dallas, so it's the best of both worlds. We'd love it.
How's your wife doing now?
I really appreciate you asking that. She's doing fantastic. She's pretty much made a full recovery. She has to do immunotherapy every 3 weeks, but she's doing great. Run circles around me, that's for sure.
Share with us what it meant to you to own your life while she was going through her medical problems.
Man, it's hard to even fathom how, when you get hit with being told that you have stage 4 breast cancer and they feel like it's gone into the lymph nodes, So it went from W-2 job where it's like, oh, God, you know, I've got this much PTO time off. Long story short, it's like, how am I going to be able to be at work all the time like my boss expects, but then also run into the hospital and getting her to treatments and when she was 2 weeks on chemo to even drive. I went from that to totally controlling my freedom where I could be here for her the entire time. I could do what I needed to do for her and take care of everything else while she was able to heal and recover. So couldn't have done it. I mean, Chris Wyatt, I know, has a very similar story. It's just like you can't even imagine it until you go through it, being able to control your time. You hear control your time and you think, ooh, I can go to the Bahamas and vacation whenever I want. More than that, it means you can just live your life as you need and want to live it.
What do your friends and relatives think now? And I'm going to add to that and let you ramble on however you want to take this. Have your friends changed at all in doing this? That's something a lot of people bring up to me when I interview them, that their group, their oriented group that they spend most of their time with has changed. Has that happened with you at all or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got a couple of our dear friends. Some have moved up to Allen, so we're far apart, but we make a point to get together every month. So you've got your dear close friends, but you find that a lot of your work associates, people in department associations and stuff, you just don't have opportunities or the need to get together. But what you find is that your circle suddenly is the Lifestyles Unlimited people, your fellow investors, you're just some of the best, nicest people I've ever met. And you all have that abundance mentality. The analogy I use is like Ford, a guy working for Ford is not going to sit down with a guy from GM and go, hey, you wouldn't believe our new product and what we're doing and blah, blah, blah. At Lifestyles, you got that. We have a group of about, I don't know, eight of us up here leads that we regularly call each other, ask each other questions, and like, what would you do when this happens? Or we're all friends. We go out and eat together. We help each other. It's just an amazing community in that sense.
If you run into people that have just looking into this, what do you tell them?
I mean, I think I'm a perfect example of that because it took me so long, right? But I know for sure that even with all of my experience, I could not have done this without Lifestyles Education, the networking, investors, and the roadmap. And I've looked at other programs, and they don't offer all of that. You know, it's kind of a sales pitch and get rich quick kind of thing. And this is a no, do it slow, steady, do it right. But more importantly, the networking and the friendship and the trust you build up is so, to me, so different than anything else I've seen.
So I've never asked you about your kids in the past, so I guess we've got some spare time here. Let's bring that up. How many kids you have?
Well, my wife would say she has one, me. She kept looking for me. She said, someday, you know, you got to grow up first. And I guess that just never happened. I don't know.
All right.
But that being said, we've got, like, I've lost count, 18 or 19 nephews and nieces. And the big deal we're doing right now is we're trying to help one of those nieces and her husband, who's a fireman, she's a nurse. We're trying to help them buy the place next to us. Which would be wonderful.
Wow. The farm next to your farm, right? Or the apartment next to your apartment. Which one are you talking about?
No, that this would be, they would own a farm right next door to us. So this is something I could have never done with my W-2 job to help them out like this, but it's legacy stuff. It just feels wonderful to be able to help them get started like this and live this lifestyle.
So I'll tell you a story. We'll finish this up with this story because it really has to do with growth and wealth. My great-great-grandfather owned a pig farm, and he had three sons, and each one of those three sons bought the pig farm on the other sides of him. So pretty soon, you know, and a pig farm is not just you have pigs. You have giant cornfields to be able to feed all these pigs, right? And so they bought acreage after acreage after acreage, and every time somebody would die or move on, they'd buy the acreage right next to them. He kept doing that, and pretty soon they had so much acreage they had all the corners in the county, and they started putting tractor store on one corner, and they put an airport, and one of the sons went into the aviation of crop dusting and all that kind of stuff and planes and stuff. And so one son was owned the airport, one son owned the local store, and one son owned the tractor and RV store. And but they owned almost the whole thing. Then one of the sons actually ran for like the some type of political thing because they owned almost the whole county. I mean, that's the way America works, right? Just buy the farm next to you. I just remember my great-grandfather telling me that just buy the farm next to you is all you have to do. So if you keep doing that, pretty soon you'll own that whole county, and then you're going to have to run for politics, Robert.
I went in as a realist or an idealist and came out a realist. I will not do that again.
You were in politics all the time when I first met you. I mean, you were working your bottom off on politics, so I guess you're out of it. You got it out of your system, huh?
Yeah, I sure have tried to.
Well, it's great to have you on. I really appreciate you coming on the radio again. You've been on several times, but every time it's always interesting to hear your story again and to see where you're at mentally. Man, all these sales, that's an incredible deal to sell that many properties, to get it done, get in, get it done. A lot of people get hung up. They get slowed up. They get stopped somewhere along the way. Nothing seems to stop you. So congratulations on all your success.
The networking and everything else, I couldn't have done it without you guys.
Well, we're glad to have you on there because networking only happens if it's both ways, right? So you've brought a lot of information, institutional stuff to us. I remember when I joined the Apartment Association, you know, after I owned a bunch of apartments and I was mentoring people in apartments, I said to myself, Dell, maybe you should go to the Apartment Association and actually learn how to run one of these things.
Right.
You know, we own a lot of them, but we don't really know technically what should be done. And so that's how we got into the Apartment Association. And now the Apartment Association is into us. So it's a good mix both ways. Again, Robert, thanks for coming on. The rest of you out there, remember this. This isn't just about making some money. This is about living on that 26 acres. This is about a quality of lifestyle that you can't replicate if you have to get up and go to work every day and drive an hour in and an hour out and live that life of quiet desperation. This is the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more of Dell's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Wamsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.